Hi, and thank you for joining us for In All Things, a weekly podcast of the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. I'm Rachel Joseph. Your host for In All Things is Dean Weaver, State Clerk of the EPC. We pray that God uses Dean and his guests to inform and inspire you about the EPC and how God is working in and through our global movement of Evangelical Presbyterian Churches. The motto of our family of congregations is, in essentials, unity, in non-essentials, liberty, in all things, charity. Now, here's Dean.
And thank you again, Rachel, as always. Always appreciate the introduction and appreciate you introducing us to your friends as well as you join us for another edition of In All Things, because that is the way that In All Things gets out there. It gets out there largely by word of mouth. It gets out there by you liking us on social, sharing us on social, sending an email with the link attachment to the elders in your church or your small group members. It's fun for me when I go to presbytery meetings, which is the regional gathering of churches in our denomination, and people come up to me and say, I really liked that episode you did with Rufus Smith about the General Assembly, or I really appreciated the one you did with Enid Flores about the book she has coming out. It kind of builds this sort of sense of family. And I think that's what the EPC is. We're a family of churches. And whether you're part of the EPC or just listening in, we're grateful to have you here. There's a lot of ways that you could be spending your time, but you chose to go to Podbean or Spotify or someplace to download this podcast and take us in, perhaps at the end of your day, or maybe as you're driving to work, whatever it is. Thank you. Thank you for being a part of the In All Things EPC family. And today we're excited to have Holly Lazaro with us. And Holly is not only a ruling elder in the EPC, she's an author, and she's the founder of a ministry called Study with Friends. And we're going to hear more about that ministry and talk all things digital ministry today. So Holly, welcome to In All Things.
Thanks. This is fun.
Yeah, this is great. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Me too.
All right. Well, actually, very fitting today, one of our sponsors, and it really isn't complicated. If you're interested in being a sponsor of In All Things, just send us $1. If you send us $1, you're in. And so far, we've had, I think, what, four people do that? Four people. We're up to four sponsors now, so it's really taking off. But one of our sponsors, ironically today, is Study with Friends. Study with Friends is a discipleship ministry that engages people in both online conversations, but also helps parlay written resources that people can use to help grow in a sense of community as people deal with real life issues in the context of reflecting on them in community with God's Word. And we'll hear more about that today, so I won't say too much because the founder of that is actually with us today. But if you're looking for something to help you, especially, say, during the Lenten season, begin to be more intentional about growing in your life with Christ, then I encourage you to consider Study with Friends. And we'll get more information on how you can connect with them at the end of this episode. So, Holly, give us a brief bio. Okay, so I gave very scant details. You're at the Langhorne Presbyterian Church, mm-hmm. but you grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania.
No, Pittsburgh.
You grew up in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Because your brother's in Erie, that's why I think that. So Holly
took
and I
30 seconds for us to mention my brother.
It was coming. You knew it was coming. So this is a disclaimer. Holly's brother and I went to college together, so we knew each other from a way back. And now you live actually in the town I grew up. So even though you're from Pittsburgh, you went to Yardley, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and I grew up in Yardley, Pennsylvania, and rightfully migrated back to the holy city of Pittsburgh. So we actually have so much in common.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about. We'll save some of that for offline. But tell us a little bit about your bio. How did you not only come to faith, but how did you end up at this place where you are as a ruling elder leading this digital ministry? How did you get there from here?
Oh, okay. So I always give credit, of course, to Jesus for the conversion, but also significantly to CCO.
Oh, okay. Where did you go to college?
IUP.
Did you really? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I was a CCO staff person at IUP.
I do.
Oh, good grief.
do you Who remember Joe?
Coffer?
Yep.
No mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is getting weird.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I hired Joe Coffer.
Yeah.
It was one of my best friends in college.
So I had my official conversion for sure when I was 13. My brother was attending Grove City
and
having a revival in his own experience and, you know, would bring home resources and a fire.
Yeah.
And he brought me a book called Johnny, which is Johnny Erickson's story. Oh,
yeah, sure.
And I read it and it was, I know this is an unusual experience, but it was that impactful that at the end I prayed the prayer. It was in the back of the book.
Okay.
And I was like, that's the direction I want to go.
Wow. That had a huge formation on who you had become.
Totally.
Wow.
And I would love to meet her someday.
Oh, yeah.
And tell her that story.
Oh, you got to do it.
She probably wouldn't care. But no, I'm sure she would. I'm sure she would.
She'd be so blessed by it. Yeah.
But I'm sure I'm not the only one that, you know, has had an experience like that. But so not really being plugged in, my faith really didn't grow. Of course, we were churched, but nominally churched.
Right.
Sort of a Sunday-only faith. And I jokingly say, I tell my kids, I think my mom really was hoping that Jesus would fix me because I was pretty naughty. So she went throughout. I was pretty, because, and I often say, I had two choices. Being Seth's sister, I could try to be Seth, which was not, that's my brother. Yeah. Joseph, it's the end of Joseph. His name is Seth. I could try to be great and good and organized, or I could be chaotic and a troublemaker. Just be the opposite of who he was. So I chose the second. And so I think that my mom really was relying on church. Like, she took me to everything, church, youth group, all of it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a super deep church. And so I wasn't really well discipled.
Yeah.
And then I got to college and my roommate was a Christian and I went bananas in college, stayed school. I mean, I chose that school because it was the number one party school.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted that. I was excited for that. I did enjoy that. And my roommate, you know, I would come home and she was just living a completely different life.
Mm.
And it didn't take long for the Lord to show me that her life was better.
Mm.
Fundamentally, I was not really enjoying it. And long story short, we had prayed the prayer in my dorm room with Joe.
Uh-huh.
So that was when I really was able to be plugged in because she was already plugged in.
Yeah.
You know, she came to school and sought that immediately.
Yeah.
So I think it was the second semester of my freshman year.
Okay.
I was able to just go along with her. And that's when I began to truly be discipled. And so that was, I was 17 when I was a freshman.
Wow.
And so CCO, the model is, this is a funny segue. The model is that they want to build you into a leader.
Right.
And I was a baby Christian. And for better or worse, a couple years in, they asked me to lead a Bible study. The first week, two people came and the second week, nobody came. So we were not on a course to be a Bible study leader from the very beginning. But that was the trajectory that God took me in once my kids were born. And I went to, I don't know if you're familiar with the group called MOPS.
Sure. Mothers of Preschoolers.
Yeah, it was a great group for me.
Yeah.
My mom had just died when Gianna's my oldest, when she was 5 months old. And so I knew that I needed community and other women.
Yeah.
And that was a great place for me to find that. And so that really was the kickstart to being passionate about leading women and discipling women. And I started teaching Bible studies in the local church. I started teaching a MOPS Bible study. I think at one point I had 3 or 4 Bible studies a week that I taught because I'm one of those students who, as soon as I learn something, I'm like, everybody has to hear this.
Yeah.
Wait till I tell you. Wait till you hear.
And we might want to come back at some point, Holly, and talk about how teaching is actually one of the best ways of learning.
For sure.
Because, I mean, I learn more by teaching probably than I do. If I just sit and listen, I absorb a certain amount.
Yeah.
But if I have to prepare to teach someone else, I learn so much more.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there's an expression that says you learn when you learn, but you really learn when you teach.
Yeah.
And for sure. I mean, because you have to organize your thoughts, and in order to have organized thoughts, they have to be, you know, very coherent. And that means you have to really understand the material. So for sure, I think there's, for people who are excited students, there's a natural teaching heart there. Like there's a cycle. It's cyclical.
That's another place maybe to come back to is I think we need to do a better job of igniting people's curiosity. I don't think we're curious enough as a people. I think we run to kind of black and white.
Do you mean in the church?
Yes, mm-hmm. I specifically mean. I think in general that's true in society, but I think it's particularly true in the church. I think we run more towards things where we feel like there's certainty because that feels safe and secure, and there's certain things that we should do that in. But I think we've really not nurtured how to ask good questions.
Oh, I agree.
How to be inquisitive.
And a great place to talk about that will be when we talk about apologetics, because I think there are so many people who just eschew that whole line of thinking, especially women, which frustrates me to say, but they just don't want to ask those questions. And there's so such beauty in asking those questions and getting them answered.
So. Yeah. So we'll get to that conversation, but I love how God has taken all these different pieces of your life, from when your brother came up from college and you read Joni Erickson Tada's book, to going to IUP and being exposed to the CCO and Bible studies and MOPS, and puts all those things together. And here you are now. You have come to this place in life where you're the teacher, you're the mentor, you're the person who's sharing what God has deposited in you with others. And you've started this digital ministry called Ministry to Friends. I mean, what? Tell us more why you started that ministry, and what's its mission statement? What are you hoping to accomplish?
You're going to put me on the spot. I always have to look at the mission statement. But so I started it really with a small goal. And I don't know how much time we have for the origin story, but I will say that it's the origin story of the ministry isn't really complete without a discussion of my disobedience and following the calling, because I was vehemently against the calling. Because I take very seriously that teachers are accountable.
Right. Let not many of you wish to become teachers, my friends, and let you incur a stricter judgment.
Yeah.
And more people should take that more
James
seriously.
3. Yeah. And so I had been teaching in the local church. So one of the things that I did as a teacher in the local church is I would teach a year and then take a year off, because I didn't want to have a following, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I wanted people to be able to put me in with a host of teachers that they, and especially women, I think, we tend to become so relational that it's difficult for us to go be taught by another or go to a different Bible study. So I was pretty intentional about that. And what I noticed was that my life felt spiritually easier when I was not in a season of teaching. Mm. I felt like I was under attack, you know, spiritual attack. Things felt harder. And I think that was true for sure. I think that, you know, when you do more, the enemy wants to, you know.
Yeah. If you're doing nothing, the enemy doesn't pay attention. But if you're encroaching upon his territory, you're going to get some pushback.
Yeah. And so I experienced that, and I was down to do it in the local church. But then when I felt this calling, I just felt like it was bigger than I was able to live into. I mean, it is. Yeah. It is. It still is, even though I've learned how to do it. And I think we're doing it well. It's still bigger than I'm up to. This is more than I'm equipped to be and do. And of course, you know, you learn to rely on the Lord. But at the time, I was just completely flopping around like a fish and having tantrums with the Lord. Like, I just don't want to do that. And I'll tell you, this is an interesting story. And I thought about it last night. I've never shared it on a recorded experience, but I'm going to share it with you. We can edit it out if you think it's too much. But I sat down with my husband after like a year of feeling the internal call and being disobedient and saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. And I said to my husband, why? I said, I just feel like the accountability. I just feel like I'm not up to the task. And I said, and I feel like I just don't want that level of spiritual attack. Like, if I'm teaching 20, 30, 50, 55 people in the local church, how much more will we be attacked as a family if we expand this ministry? And my husband, he's a man of few words, but he just sat back and said, oh, honey, you've made a deal with the devil. You said if you wouldn't teach, he'd leave you alone. He said, you can't make a deal with the devil. He's a liar. And even as I tell you this today, it gives me goosebumps, because he was so right.
Right.
And he just encouraged me to go forward, and that we would, you know, we would be sustained through whatever. And here's the great ending to that story. When I started this ministry, there was a significant diminishing of the ways that I felt attacked, the ways that I felt our family was attacked. It was like the Lord brought us into a place of protection where I had thought that he would allow us to be attacked. And so there's a beauty to that story, and I always have to tell it. I don't tell it mic'd up usually because that's intense that my husband said I made a deal with the devil, but he's just a plain talker.
Yeah.
And for him to have really called it out and seen it so much more clearly than I did, and then remind me that I'm negotiating with a liar. It just made it so clear that we were going to walk into this calling. So,
well, there's so many good things there, Holly, that we could come back on another day and kind of dig down deeper on. One has to do with the idea of calling. And you pointed out a couple of things that when I talk to people about calling that I always point to. One is, I think it's always better to be in a place of reluctance. You know, I'm always a little concerned about the person that's too eager to jump into a particular ministry, because I'm just not sure that they've done the self-examination yet. And you strike me as someone who has done a lot of self-examination, and that's what kind of gives you cause to pause in going into that. So that's number one. Number two is the calling is always something that's beyond what you can do, right? God rarely calls you to something that's like well within your capacity, because then you trust in yourself and your own kind of internal faculties and resources. When God calls you to something bigger than yourself, I don't know, like say being the stated clerk of a denomination, you go, how in the world could I possibly do this? This is way beyond what I'm able to do. And that's when God says, okay, well then you're obviously going to have to look to me to take care of that. So I mean, so,
and that's what he wants.
Exactly right. And then you also raise some great stuff about just how marriage works in terms of calling and ministry, because, you know, I can't tell you how many times Beth has been that person who spoke those straightforward words to me. There was one time years ago where I was having a conflict in the church that I was serving at the time. This is going back over 25 years ago. And I really wanted to leave. I mean, I'd been there at that point probably about 7 or 8 years. And I was like, all right, I think I'm done. Yeah. You know, super painful, super hard. And the church of my dreams reached out to me and wanted me to consider coming to be their pastor. And I was like, oh, this is of the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really ugly over here. Yeah. And this is really desirable over here. And Beth just looked at me and said, no. She said, a calling is not about what you're running away from. It's what you're being called towards. And this isn't about you being called to something. This is about you wanting to run away from something.
So you have a plain talker like I have.
I do. I do. But, you know, it's helpful in ministry, if you're not married, to have that person that can speak into your life and say those hard things. If you are married, then that person needs to be someone who can be the plain talker so that we can kind of do those self-correctives, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's pivot a little bit here because Study with Friends is principally a digital ministry. And I know you have a lot of thoughts about digital ministry, because on the one hand, you're fully digital. On the other hand, you're like the queen of analog. So how do you reconcile those two things? Talk to us about your thoughts on what role does digital ministry play in a post-COVID church? Because I think people are all still trying to figure this out.
Yeah, I think the reason that I am really supportive of analog is because I understand the detriments of digital. I experience them in ministry.
And so when you say analog, just for the listener who isn't like fluent in this, you're talking about like paper.
Unplugged.
Like unplugged, like books, like literal paper that you put in your hand, like Gutenberg stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And so I think that anytime that we consider a type of ministry, we have to contextualize it. I mean, all ministry has to be contextualized.
Right.
And Paul, example in the Areopagus, everything should be contextualized to the audience that we've been given. But all things have to also be rooted in the Bible. And so I think there's a lot of ways to think about this. We all, as biblical leaders and theologians, think about the community of the Trinity and the fellowship of the Trinity and how that's an example for the church and how that speaks to us in the area of how we relate to each other and how we should relate and be in fellowship. True discipleship, true fellowship has to be in person and has to be authentic in that way. So when I think about digital ministry, and of course, everybody's talking about digital ministry, because especially the church, there's a spectrum of people who really get it And there's a group of people who wish they got it and feel like there's something there, but they can't exactly grab hold of it successfully. And then there's a group of people who think they get it and they're totally not getting it. And so my overarching recommendation when it comes to digital ministry is that you think of it the same way you would think of any other element of your church ministry, in that the work that you're called to do in the church should lead your digital ministry, not the other way around. Your desire to do digital ministry, or the way that you feel pressured, or, you know, I say don't, not you personally, but like a pastor or a ministry leader, we should be doing something digitally. That can't lead your thinking.
So the digital is the cart, not the horse.
Exactly. Okay. That's a good way to say it.
So I'm going to be provocative and push into a question here
a little bit,
because I've heard some people say, and I'm not advocating this, but I'm just saying this is a discussion that's out there in the digital spaces, that digital itself is a space. Mm-hmm. Like, I sometimes think about the theology of space and the theology of presence. And I think that's part of the argument for kind of being in person for a lot of what we do. But there are some people, particularly as we move into virtual stuff, I even know one person who's talking about doing ministry in virtual space, mm-hmm. as an actual incarnated
space.
Realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. And my thoughts are, make sure you're called into, like any other missionary, right? Don't go running into a space or a place unless you're sure you're called into that.
Good counsel.
Place.
Yeah.
Because it is its own culture.
Right.
So we should be thinking about it from a ministry and mission standpoint, mm. as if it's its own culture. And we should be missional and say, what's already the truth about this culture? How do I relate to this culture? How do I not step on the toes of this culture? And how do I bring Jesus and the light into this culture in a way that is winsome,
okay.
and easy to assimilate by this culture? So you're thinking about it from a space, and you're right. I'm thinking about it from a cultural standpoint.
And sure.
Because I think probably most of our listeners right now can think of that, can make that mental transfer. Oh, this is like a mission field. This is like a ministry field. If I were a missionary, I'd be considering cultural contextualization. I need to think about that.
Okay.
In a digital
culture.
That's
super helpful. That's a great rubric to think through that.
And if I may say, I think that also we have to think of digital ministry in the same way that we think of in-person ministry, which is there's an element of evangelism and there's an element of discipleship. And you don't want to conflate those two spaces. So you're not going to speak digitally to the unchurched or de-churched the same way that you're going to speak to those who are in your church, who are already disciples.
Right.
And so that's
missiological thinking. Okay, so let's look at the two things kind of and kind of play them off against each other, if you would, Holly. On the one hand, what are the ways in which the digital cart can serve the church's horse, if you will,
great.
In an appropriate mm-hmm. way? How can digital be an asset to ministry? And then on the other side, why is it still so important to be grounded in the flesh and in the analog, as you've described it? Why is that still so essential? So could you say, how is digital a servant that can be really done for the good of the church, mm-hmm. and why is it important to still stay grounded in the kind of incarnational, personal, analog world?
Okay. I think that a good way to talk about that is thinking, I mentioned a moment ago that there are sort of two lanes of digital ministry, in the same way there are two lanes in your church: evangelism and discipleship. So there's outreach and then there's growing people up. To be Westminster, there is the gathering and perfecting of the saints. And so when we're gathering, when we're evangelizing, that's a different methodology, but a good example to answer your question. I mentioned that I think it's really important to have your digital ministry be a product of your called church ministry. So all churches are called to a handful of things. We're all called to the Great Commission, but some pastors and some churches have deeper ministries in like Maybe you have a really vibrant marriage ministry. Maybe you have a really vibrant children's ministry. All churches have strengths and weaknesses. And so when we think about evangelism, some people in digital ministry are actually calling digital the new church's front door.
I was just going to ask that question. I think digital can serve well if you think of it as the front door of the church rather than the back door
That's
of the
right.
church.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think we have to broaden how we think about digital. Digital is your email list. Digital is your website. Digital is your YouTube presence. It is your virtual offerings if you have a Thursday evening class that you do on Zoom instead of whatever. So digital is broad. It's, of course, your social media, but that to me, that's very small part of it. People, I think there's a mindset of digital is social media. It's not just socials.
Right.
It's the entirety of if computers and screens are involved.
Yeah.
That's part of your digital ministry.
Crazy enough, but I listened to a podcast not that long ago that says email is still kicking everything else's butt in terms of that. Like you think it's social and you're like, I mean, certainly social is important, but in terms of
We could do a whole podcast on how to do emails well.
Right, right.
Yeah, and how to do them poorly.
Right.
But broadly, so you have spiritually curious people who are finding you and what you're saying as a church and as a pastor before you've been able to shake their hand and meet them and welcome them.
Right.
They're investigating you in the same way, I hate to productize it, but in the same way we investigate everything.
Right.
We do first so digitally. Let me look at the website. Let me look at the socials. Maybe I sign up for the email. Maybe I sign up to watch some YouTube videos on demand. I'm going to get a flavor of your ministry as a church digitally very likely before I come and darken the door and sit in a pew. And so thinking about it as the front door, especially with respect to evangelism, you have to be intentional about how are you speaking to the unchurched? How are you speaking to the de-churched? You can't neglect that. Mm. You can't treat the de-churched the same as the unchurched. And that's new. We can talk about that another day. But those things have to be quite intentional. And there are a lot of resources. Like you don't have to be the one who creates a video, a great video for your website's homepage to represent what you're trying to represent.
You can curate other, because there's tons of great stuff out there, right?
Yeah. And then the other element would be discipleship. And all of it comes under what are you already doing as a church? What are you already doing for your ministry priorities? How are you already fulfilling that? And how can that then translate to digital?
Okay. Well, that's super helpful. And maybe what we could do is talk a little bit about, because it seems like this is a conversation, Holly, that needs to go a little bit further. So I think as we wrap this down today, we'll come back and have a part two if you're open.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about digital in terms of discipleship, and we'll go there next because you've talked about the front door, but I know a lot of people are afraid that digital is becoming the back door, right? Mm-hmm. It's like I'm going to the church of my pajamas where, you know, I'm sitting down with St. Pillow and St. Couch, and I'm watching on YouTube instead of getting up and going to be present. But you believe that being present is super important, and that really plays into discipleship especially. So in part two, can we come back and have that conversation?
I would love that.
Okay. Yeah. That would be awesome. All right. Well, thanks for teeing that up and getting us thinking about digital ministry. Love hearing about your story. And so for those of you who have been listening in today, we hope you'll come back and join us for part two of a conversation with Holly Lazaro about not just digital ministry, but also we're going to kind of pivot a little bit more towards discipleship and how that is both digital, but also the importance of doing it in person. My friends, please continue to pass this on to others. In fact, this would be a great podcast series, the two or three that Holly and I are going to do together. You might want to pass those on to the people in your congregation who are doing anything from education, adult education, discipleship, women's ministries, men's ministries, people who would be thinking more about how to, and I love Holly's use of the word contextualization, because we have to think like missionaries. We have to think about our culture, whether it's in the digital space or in our neighborhood, in a way in which we ask ourselves the question, how can we reach people who increasingly know very little about Christ for the gospel? in Christ, and to think about that and to use digital as a means to help us reach people for Christ is a super important conversation. So we're just getting started. We hope that you'll come back and join us for parts two and maybe even parts three, depending on how this thing goes. But I remind you, my friends, as we finish this day, that digital falls under what you're about to hear from this passage of scripture. I don't know the Apostle Paul was thinking about the digital spaces when he wrote this, but thankfully the Holy Spirit inspired him in such a way that what he said here covers that ground quite beautifully. Because you see, the Son is the image of the invisible God. He is the firstborn over all creation. For in him, all things were created. That's a stunning thing. Even that which didn't get created out of nothing, that the stuff that was created out of stuff by the people who were created by the Creator to create things like podcasts and online digital resources. For in him, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible, invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him. And here's the thing, they're for him. He is before all things, my friends, and in him all things. And there's nothing outside of that. All things hold together, for he is the head of the body, the church. And that includes, my friends, the EPC family of churches. Until the next time when we continue this conversation, and we hope that you'll join us, I bid grace and peace to you.
Thank you again for joining us. On behalf of the entire team, please join us for our next episode. For more information about the EPC, including a directory of local churches, online resources, and much more, visit our website at www.epc.org. I'm Rachel Joseph. I pray you have an overwhelming sense of God's presence in all things today.